Chapter 8 of The Time Machine by H.G. Wells. I found the palace of green porcelain when we approached it about noon, deserted and falling into ruin. Only ragged vestiges of glass remained in its windows, and great sheets of the grain facing had fallen away from the corroded metallic framework. It lay very high upon the turfy down, and looking north-eastward before I entered it, I was surprised to see a large estuary, or even creek, where I judged Wandsworth and Buttersea must have once been. I thought then, though I had never followed up the thought, of what might have happened, or what might be happening to the living things in the sea. The material of the palace proved to be, on examination, to be indeed porcelain, and along the face of it I saw an inscription in some unknown character. I thought rather foolishly that Weena might help me to interpret this, but I only learned the bare idea of writing had never even entered her head. She always seemed to me, I fancy, more human than she was, perhaps because her affection was so human. Within the long, big valves of the door, which were open and broken, we found, instead of the customary hall, a long garden lit by many windows. At the first glance, I was reminded of a museum. The tiled floor was thick with dust, and the remarkable array of miscellaneous objects was shrouded in the same gray covering. Then I perceived, standing strange and gaunt in the center of the hall, what was clearly the lower part of a huge skeleton. Recognized by the oblique feet that it was some extinct creature that, after a fashion of the Megatherium, the skull and upper bones lay beside it in thick dust. In one place where rainwater had dropped through the leak in the roof, the thing itself had been worn away. Further in the gallery was a huge skeleton barrel of a brontosaurus. My museum hypothesis was confirmed. Going towards the side, I found what appeared to be sloping shelves, and clearing away the thick dust, I found odd familiar glass cases of our own time. They must have been airtight to judge from the fair preservation of some other continents. Clearly, we stood among the ruins of some latter-day South Kensington. Here, apparently, was the paleontological section, and a very splendid array of fossils it must have been, though the inevitable process of decay had been staved off for a time, and had, through the extinction of bacteria and fungi, lost 99/100 of its force, was nonetheless, with extreme sureness, if with extreme slowness, to work again with all its treasures. Here and there I found traces of little people in the shape of rare fossils broken to pieces or threaded in strings upon the reeds, and in cases had in some instances been bodily removed by the Morlocks, as I judged. The place was very silent. The thick dust deadened our footsteps. Weena, who had been rolling a sea urchin down the sloping glass of a case, presently came as I stared about me and very quietly took my hand and stood beside me. At first, I was so much surprised by this ancient monument of an intellectual age that I never gave thought to the possibilities it presented. Even my preoccupation with the time machine receded a little from my mind. To judge from the size of the place, the Palace of Green Porcelain had a great deal more than a gallery of paleontology, perhaps historical galleries. It might have been even a library. To me, at least in my present circumstances, this was vastly more interesting than the spectacle of old-time geology in decay. Exploring, I found another gallery running perversely to the first. This appeared to be devoted to minerals. At the sight of a block of sulfur set my mind running on gunpowder, but I could find no saltpeter, indeed no nitrates of any kind. Doubtless they had deliquesced ages ago. Yet the sulfur hung in my mind and set up a train of thinking. As for the rest of the contents of the gallery, though the whole wall were best preserved as it saw, I had little interest. I am no specialist in mineralogy, and I went down a very ruinous aisle running parallel to the first hall. Apparently this section had been devoted to natural history, but everything had long since passed out of recognition. A few shriveled and blackened vestiges of what had once been stuffed animals, desiccated mummies in jars, and once held spirits, a brown dust of departed plants, was all. I am sorry for that, because it would have been glad to trace the patent readjustments by which the conquest of animated nature had been attained. Then it came to a simply colossal proportion, but singularly ill-lit floor running downward at a slight angle from the end which I entered at intervals. White globes hung from the ceiling, many of which them cracked and smashed, which suggested that originally the place had been artificially lit. Here I was once more in my element, for right on either side were huge bolts of big machines, all greatly corroded, and many broken down, but some still fairly complete. You know I have a certain weakness for mechanism, and I was inclined to linger among these, the more so as the most part had interest in puzzles. I could make out the vaguest guesses as to what they were for. I fancied that I could solve their puzzles. I could find myself in positions of power that might be used against the Morlocks. Suddenly Lena came very close to my side, so suddenly that she startled me. Had it not been for her, I don't think I could have noticed that the floor of the gallery sloped at all. In the end, I came to what was quite above ground and was lit by a rare slit-like windows. As I went down the length, the ground came up against these windows until there was a pea-like in the area of London House before the earth, and only a narrow line of daylight at the top. I went slowly along, puzzling about the machines, and had been too intent upon them to notice the gradual diminution of light, which Owena's increasing apprehensions drew my attention. Then I saw the gallery ran down at last into thick darkness. I hesitated, and then I looked about me. I saw the dust was less abundant, and its surface even less. Further away from the dimness, it appeared to be broken by a number of small, narrow footprints. My sense of immediate presence of the Morlocks revived. I felt that I was wasting my time on academic examination of machinery. I called to mind it was already far too advanced in the afternoon, and I had still no weapon, no refuge, no means of making a fire. Then down the hall, remote blackness of the gallery, I heard a peculiar pattering, and the same odd noises I heard down the well. I took Weena's hand, and I struck with a sudden idea. I turned to a machine from which we projected a lever, not unlike those of a signal box, clambered down on the stand, grasping the lever in my hand. I put all my weight upon it sideways. Suddenly, Weena deserted in the central hall, began to whimper. I had judged the strength of the lever pretty correctly, for it snapped after a minute's strain, and I rejoined her with a mace in my hand, more than sufficient, I judged, for any Morlock's skull that I might encounter, and I longed very much to kill a Morlock or so, very inhuman, you might think, to what going and killing one's descendants, but it was impossible somehow to feel any humanity in the things, only my disinclination to leave Weena, and a persuasion that I began to slack my thirst for murder, my time machine might suffer, restrained me from going down after the gallery and killing the brutes I heard. Well, mace in hand and Weena in the other, I went out of the gallery and into another still larger one, which at first glance reminded me of a military chapel hung with tattered flags, the brown and charred rags that hung from sides I presently recognized as the decaying vestiges of books had once long since dropped to pieces, a resemblance of prints had left them. But here and there were warped boards and cracked metal flaps that told the tale well enough. Had I been a literary man, perhaps I would have moralized upon the futility of all ambition. But as it were, one thing that struck me with the keenest force was the enormous waste of labor to which this somber wilderness of rotting paper testified. All the time, I will confess that I thought chiefly of philosophical transactions in my own 17 papers on physical optics. Then, going to the broad staircase, we came to what had once been a gallery of technical chemistry. And here, I had not a little hope of useful discoveries, except one, and of the roof, which had collapsed. The gallery was well preserved, and I went eagerly to every unbroken case. At last, one, the airtight cases I found a box of matches. Very eagerly, I tried them. They were perfectly good. They were not even damp. And I turned to Wina. I cried with her in her own tongue, for now I had a weapon indeed against the horrible creatures which we feared. And so in this derelict museum, the soft carpeting of dust, Wina's huge light, I solemnly performed a composite dance, whistling the Land of Leo as cheerfully as I could. And I put on a modest can-can, part step and skirt dance for my own tailcoat permitted, and in part original, for I'm naturally inventive, as you know. Now, I still, for that big box of matches, escaped aware of time for immemorial years was the most strange. For me, it was the most fortunate thing. Yet, oddly enough, I found a far unlikelier substance. That was camphor. I found it in a sealed jar, and that by chance, that had been hermetically sealed. I fancied that it was paraffin wax and smashed the glass accordingly. The odor of camphor was unmistakable, and the universal decay, this volatile substance had chanced to survive, though perhaps many thousands of centuries. It reminded me of sepia painting that had once been done with the ink of a fossil filamentite that must have perished and become fossilized millions of years ago. I was about to throw it away. I remembered that it was inflammable and burned with a bright flame. In fact, an excellent candle. I put it in my pocket, and I found no explosives. However, any means of breaking down the bronze doors, my iron crowbar was the most helpful thing I chanced upon. Nevertheless, I left the galleries greatly elated. I cannot tell you all the story of that long afternoon. It would require great effort of memory to recall my explorations all in proper order. I remember a long gallery of rusting stands of arms and how I hesitated between my crowbar and a hatchet or a sword. I could not carry both. However, my bar of iron promised the best against bronze gates, and there were numbers of guns, pistols, and rifles. Most were masses of rust, but many were still some new metal and still fairly sound, but any cartridges of powder that might have once been had rotted into dust. One corner I saw was charred and shattered, perhaps an explosion among the specimens. Another was a vast array of idols, Polynesian, Mexican, Grecian, Phoenician, every country on earth, I should think. And here, yielding to an irresistible impulse, I wrote my name upon the nose of a C-type monster from South America that took my fancy. As the evening drew on, my interest waned, and I went through gallery after gallery, dusty, silent, almost ruinous, that exhibited something more than heaps of rust and lignite, something fresher. At one place, I suddenly found myself near the model of a tin mine, and then by merest accident, I discovered an airtight case, two dynamite cartridges. I shouted Eureka and smashed the case with joy. Then it came a doubt, I hesitated. In the side gallery, I made my essay. I never had such disappointment as waiting 5, 10, 15 minutes for an explosion never came. Of course the things were dummy. I might have guessed from their presence. I really did believe they might not have been so. I might have rushed incontinently and blown the Sphinx brown doors and proved my chances of finding the time machine altogether into non-existence. It was after that, I think, I came around to a little court within the palace. It was turf and had 3 fruit trees, so we rested and refreshed ourselves. Towards the sunset, I began to consider our position. Night was creeping upon us, and my inaccessible hiding place was still to be found. But it troubled me very little. I held in my position a thing that perhaps best of all defenses of Morlocks. I had matches, and I had camphor in my pocket, too, and the blaze were needed. It seemed to me that the best thing we could do was to pass the night in the open, protected by the fire. In the morning, we would be getting the time machine. Towards that, as yet, I had only my iron mace, and now, with my growing knowledge, I felt very differently towards those bronze doors. Up to this, I had refrained from forcing them, largely because of the mystery on the other side, They never impressed me as being very strong, and I hoped to find myself a bar of iron, not altogether inadequate for the work.